every child, thinking critically, solving problems. The Southern Arizona Research, Science, and Engineering Foundation, SARSEF, is on a mission to create the next generation of critical thinkers and problem solvers through science and engineering. Just think about that. Talk about impacting the future of the health of our planet. Hello, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. And we are indeed excited about getting down to earth, celebrating Tucson Electric Power Company's partner in sustainability, especially this partner. This show is the sixth of our Brighty Award Spotlight Series, and we are indeed ready to celebrate and share with you the important work that SARSEF is doing. And that began in 1955, and I was late to that party, I can tell you right now, because once I discovered it, it's like, where has it been all my life? But in 1955, it began as a regional science fair and has evolved into a nationally recognized nonprofit for its innovation and impact. And once you hear the show, you'll know exactly why. So please join me in welcoming Liz Baker Bowman, the Deputy Director of SARSEF. Liz, can you tell that I'm excited to have you here?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
I am indeed. You're like a poster child for SARSEF, or a poster woman, let's just say that. So let's start with the big picture of what SARSEF is. What kind of reach do you have? Who are you hoping to reach? I mean, just share away. Give us the backstory about SARSEF.
Absolutely. So as you said, we started in 1955, but back then we were just a science fair. And we were just a science fair for, 45 of those years. But what we noticed was that the kids who were winning, especially later in those years, were primarily white, primarily male, and from more affluent areas of town.
Shocking.
Right?
We have evolved.
Exactly. And so our board of directors said, that's not acceptable. That's not representative of the 8 counties that we cover in Southern Arizona. So they started hiring staff. And ever since, we have been on a mission to reach every child in Southern Arizona and teach them how to think critically and solve problems that they care about in the world.
And it will solve a lot of the world's problems, because we don't really incorporate a lot of critical thinking into our school systems. It's, if you're like me and really stink at memorization, school is ever a challenge. Critical thinking and problem solving, a whole different set of skills and a whole different dynamic, and you need both. But SARSEF is so prestigious. When I read about you were being one of the top 10 finalists in the nation for Peter Drucker Institute's Innovation Award, Peter F. Drucker, and I call him Peter F. Drucker, there was a part in my development of my professional career. I mean, I thought he hung the moon. He's an unbelievable role model for just about everything. I mean, I think I read everything he ever wrote. So what was that award for?
That award was for our nonprofit itself, because we're so adaptive. The Drucker Institute really appreciated our willingness to innovate and adapt kind of on a dime, really, because we really want to meet the needs of our students. We customize every single program that we do to the audience, whether it's the schools, the teachers, or the parents. We never give the same instruction twice, whether it's presentations or professional development. Everything has to be customized in order to truly impact a school or a group of parents or students. But that kind of willingness to innovate also spreads to our organization. And we're so glad that the Drucker Institute recognized that, we're willing to change programs that aren't working. We tweak the ones that are and continually improve. And we're willing to even improve at a board level. So we're really grateful to be recognized at a national level for that.
And it's constant innovation. It's a constant evolution from what I can see. But is there, I don't even know how to exactly ask this question, like, is there a model, or are there models? How do you go about executing that? It's really easy when you have a formula and do this, 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 and this. It's much more challenging and therefore usually more impactful if you are innovative. But how do you go about focusing on it? Like, this is 10 questions in one, and is it focused on teachers or is it focused on students? And tell us a little bit about the model and how you go into it, what your approach is.
Well, what we've learned throughout the years is that it has to be a complete package. We started out by just doing student presentations, going into the classroom and engaging students in, you know, how to do the scientific method and engineering design process with the overall goal of having them do a research project for the science fair. Now, over the years, we realized that in order to truly make a difference in a child's life, they have to have the teacher support and buy-in and the parent buy-in as well. Because there are so many cultural barriers that parents can hold about, we're not good at STEM, you know, or I don't know how to do math, so you don't either. And they're coming in with these, and the children are, you know, getting these messages at home. So how can they fight that when their biggest role models have these perceptions? And same with teachers. So many teachers graduate from college and only have one semester on how to teach science. And science is such a big topic. You know, one semester doesn't cover it. And so they don't feel prepared. And many of them feel really insecure about teaching science, let alone engineering and math. So a lot of what we do is confidence building, as well as how to run a research classroom and so much other professional development, including how to integrate the state standards into the classroom, because that's been a huge barrier ever since No Child Left Behind was implemented. The focus has been on reading, writing, and math, which is great. But unfortunately, the districts have interpreted that as no science, no social studies. In some districts in Southern Arizona, science is given 15 minutes every other week in elementary classrooms. And in one district, it was completely discouraged altogether because schools live and die by their reading, writing, and math scores.
And you know, you hear this, and it's like I want to say, okay, everybody, we're going to have a moment of silence. Because it's devastating for me to even hear that, especially with my very strong opinions about state mandated standards. I could just go on such a soapbox about the cultural bias and the lack of applicability, no critical thinking skills. Like I said, it's how can you memorize for the test? That's not learning. That's memorization and the poor teachers. And I would be that teacher. My degree is in secondary education. And I would never want to teach science because I'm one of those persons that told myself I'm no good at it, which is very typical for girls.
Absolutely.
And it's just, I see you approaching that so hands-on, and we'll get a little bit to do that. How do you, you know, I did home-based services in my long-term career. We did in-home behavioral therapy, regular therapy, but it was really a holistic model because we found you could work with kids and have them change and adapt and succeed, but they're part of a family. That's their community. So we included parents. How do you provide parental support when it comes to STEM?
So it's really interesting because, again, we have to adapt to the audience. So our usual model is offering parent nights and really just bringing in the parents who are interested and walking them through what the process looks like for students. And that's been successful, and it's changed a lot of minds. But we were fortunate enough to receive a grant from Angel Charities for children.
Yay, Angel.
Yes.
It's why I can't ever quit.
I'm so glad because we asked for a smaller grant, and it was to run student-parent workshops together. So we had students and parents in the same place, and we took them through the process of how to pick a problem that's going on in their lives and solve it using science and engineering. And the transformation was incredible. So many parents came in with their arms crossed, just so annoyed. And some of them really in hardship because we were we really focus on Title I schools, those in areas of poverty. So a lot of these parents were giving up one of their jobs. They were, you know, had to try to find childcare, but many of them just brought the whole family along, infants and 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, it was a real inconvenience to be there, but we made sure to provide pizza as an incentive.
I was going
to
ask you, I am not kidding. I was going to say, did you serve food? Because that really helps. It's a cultural thing.
Absolutely.
It's not about the free food. It's cultural and bringing families. We
Absolutely.
Learned that early on.
And so, that was, you know, it really helped to bond, but it's still, you know, there's so many parents came in unhappy to be there. And then it was amazing to watch through the process how the bonding changed. One dad, I remember just seeing him right off the bat and going, oh no, this one's going to be trouble. Cause he even sat several desks away from his daughter. And then through the process, when we talked about how science and engineering is everywhere and you can do absolutely, you know, anything you're interested using it, all of a sudden he kind of scooted over and he was like, so what about Halloween? I was like, yeah, there's a lot of science you can do around Halloween.
Yes.
You know, it's
oh
not the big
gosh.
World's, you know, biggest problem going on. But all of a sudden, his daughter lit up and she was like, that's our family's favorite holiday. And they just started talking so animatedly and it ended up being this amazing bonding experience for them. You know, we've even had one dad stand up and make the entire group of, there were about 80 people in this group, which was a fantastic turnout for that area of town. He stood up and made everybody be quiet. And he said, I never knew my daughter was smart. And she is so smart. And I am so proud.
Oh,
and it's
were you crying?
Absolutely.
I would have been like, oh my gosh. I mean, that's huge. And it's just the holistic, I call it systemic integrated approach that you take. No wonder you got an award for innovation. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. I want to know, and it's all free. We cannot forget to mention that because with our underfunded educational system, which you and I could do a 3-hour podcast on,
yes.
Having it be free, it just helps the whole my thing about a rising tide raises all ships, and you never know which great mind you're going to open or connect with that's going to benefit all of us. That's why
exactly.
I think we should tap as many minds as we can. So one of the culminations of this, and we're going to really talk about the science fair, trust me, but how do you get students interested in science and engineering in the first place? And then what's the draw? So is there a draw about the science fair? But who bites? Because it's got to be tough to just get them to say, yes, I'm interested and even take a look and overcome their fears.
Absolutely. The biggest transformation that we've seen in terms of our data in engaging women and minorities and students from areas of poverty has been focusing on solving a problem that they see going on in their lives, their community, or the world. And that's what really hooks their passion. And we took that jump by looking at research that the Girl Scouts, the National Girl Scout Council has done, and the American Association for University Women. And so many other sources say girls get engaged in STEM when they realize that they can solve a problem. They want to help people. And so we kind of twisted our pitch to, you know, from just teaching the scientific method and engineering design and doing a project on something you like to how can you make a difference in the world? And all of a sudden, the engagement has gone up and the quality of the projects has gone up because the students are so interested and engaged. They want to make that difference. And it's been absolutely thrilling to see over the last few years.
And I actually have an example of how that can play out. And I can't believe this. And I really mean it. You and I did not rehearse. We haven't spoken a word until this show to talk about what we were going to cover. But I'm working on a concept for a wolf film, Women and Wolves, The Untold Story. And what you just said is the quintessence of why I want to do this film. Until women were involved as scientific researchers in studying wolf populations, there was one set of knowledge. There was one book of knowledge. When women started observing and reporting, the entire stories, the research, the behaviors, everything about wolves changed. And someone sent me a book, this woman that I adore, Brenda Peterson, wrote a book, Wolf Nation, and she's been involved with wolf preservation for 20 years. But it wasn't until women became involved that there was a complete picture of what's going on with wolves in nature. So that's how it can play out. If you care about wolves and you're listening to this or anything, you can be a part of the solution because they need the science. There has to be mapping and there has to be data and there has to be outcomes that are studied, but they did it through the lens of a female, and we are men and women. So that's, it gave me goosebumps when you were saying that.
It's true. And you see that in so many other fields in science. And Jane Goodall was one of the, it's a classic example of, the scientific community was outraged that she named the chimpanzees.
I know, they were so furious. They were supposed to have a number.
Exactly. And that, you know, they said that she was anthropomorphizing them. But then when they looked at her data, it showed that she was just more open-minded and more perceptive of the absolutely acute behaviors that they were displaying. And she's completely, obviously we all know she's transformed how we look at animal behavior as a whole.
She's transformed the planet. And you know me, you know that I want to tell everybody that I got to spend 20 minutes. It was my 20 minutes of fame. I got to be with her, right? But she talked about that in the lecture series, the Arizona lecture series, and said, she was really put down because she didn't have a degree. Well, then Leahy got her to go to Cambridge. So she went from high school to Cambridge and got a PhD. But that is applied learning. And she knew how to do it. It's you're right. You couldn't pick a better example and an inspiration to girls. She inspires girls every day. I'm sure of that. She inspires me.
Yes, she inspired me too. She really launched me into the world of primatology.
And that's huge when you told me that and shared that with me. So I literally, you know that what you see with me is what you get, and I'm so transparent, but I really wanted to shout from the rooftops to anybody who would listen when I served as a judge for the SARSEF Fair held recently in Tucson. It really was an amazing experience. I really am hooked for life. I'm saying that on the air. But there were reasons, and one of the delightful surprises to me for the group that I was judging, fifth graders, were how many projects there were about the environment, climate change, water conservations. And I wanted to ask you, I kept saying, and I wrote a newsletter about it, and I kept saying to my team leader, are you sure these are fifth graders? Like, are you sure? And they didn't look like glitzy, my mom and dad did this whole thing. They looked like student writing with student pictures, with student cutouts, and you make them show their notebooks. So you can see, I looked at the notebooks to see if their research was documented. Are they guided to go in a direction, or how does the process work for the competition?
Basically, it's all open. All of the outreach we do, we're hoping, SARSEF Fair is the culminating event. It's kind of the carrot at the end of the road that the students have to look forward to, because research can be hard and it can be discouraging. So we want to make sure that there's a big reward at the end. We give out over $125,000 in scholarships and prizes every year.
Unbelievable.
Because we want to make sure that our kids are rewarded for using their brains. That, they get so many, there's trophies for soccer and, baseball and, all the sports. So why aren't we getting trophies regularly for kids using their brains? So we really want to make it an incredible experience for them. And even kindergartners who are winning get a check with their beautiful trophy that they receive as well. And they're so excited. And that passion starts young. I couldn't believe it. Because I knew I was coming onto this show, I just typed in climate change, and the first one to pop up from this year was a second grader.
Oh.
So children that young are aware of the peril that our planet is in, and they're trying to make a difference.
And it's kind of sad. I had to say that. Like in fifth grade, I made a joke to one of the judges that, you know what I was thinking about in fifth grade? And I can tell you, I was thinking about a boy who sat three rows over from me and that I was going to have to wear glasses. There wasn't any heaviness involved in my growing up. And I have girlfriends from grammar school and we all agree it was just an easier time. And we used to do air raids, but they were fun for kids. It's sad, but you know, now kids are thinking critically and they do want to solve problems. And some of them are angry at us. Why do you think, you personally and SARSEF, why is it so important that STEM education, especially in Arizona, why is it so needed?
It's needed because it's not valued. And that's the devastating truth. We expanded our mission. We were very STEM focused and we realized that we needed to broaden our mission away from STEM skills to critical thinking and problem-solving skills, because we were seeing that, we could kind of bang our heads against the wall talking about the importance of science and engineering. And by shifting it to, okay, we're giving students the skills, no matter what field they go into, that are going to last them a lifetime. If we teach them how to solve problems, students will stop having to ask their bosses for help every time they run into an issue. And that's changed some minds in terms of the state looking at science and engineering in a different way. And especially the business leaders we talk to who are so frustrated by the students who are coming out of the testing system and think in terms of A, B, C, and D. And if they don't find an answer immediately that's apparent to them, they think it doesn't work and they give up.
Thank you, standardized testing.
And so we're really, telling people that by teaching science and engineering skills, we're teaching students and your future employees how to think differently, how to step back and say, okay, what are variables, that are going into this and which ones can I control and not control? And, in engineering, what can be improved? How can I make this better and even better and even better than that? And really just taking a step back and looking at the problem in a different way.
So it's like STEM meets critical thinking and problem solving. And it's an incorporation of those things. And it's very sad for me to hear you say that, but it makes perfectly good sense. And it's not this bad, because I do not want in any way minimize our teachers, but they're forced to put these practices in place. And that's the result they get because they have to. The pressure is on.
Absolutely.
And I want to ask you about, I understand why you got, knowing very little, an award for innovation. And I want to ask you if this was part of it or why you did this. So I judged the fifth grader project, which makes this a much more meaningful show for me, quite frankly. And we were, I had like 40 some projects. The criteria was great. It's a well-oiled machine. We had a team leader who was great and hilarious and helpful. But then what we were asked to do once we were finished is encouraged to go visit with the eighth graders who were actually there. So when I judge my projects to give people a sense of place, all we were doing was we were in the Tucson Community Center. The students were not near their projects and we were evaluating them, each judge on their own and scoring them, and then coming back together. But then we were asked to go visit the eighth graders who were actually at their booths and engage them about their projects. Talk about giving a person hope. That's when I think I said, can I just live here for like 3 or 4 days? I'll go get a sleeping bag. And this is not hyperbole. It was so amazing to me on so many levels and inspiring to me, which is what, when I asked Jane Goodall if she had hope, what do you think she said? The children, her roots and shoots. That's what gives her hope. That's how I felt. Why do you think that's an important part of the fair experience? Why do you ask us to do that? Other than to make us feel great.
It makes the students feel great too.
Oh, it was so much fun.
One of the, I mean, the reason why we start at pre-K is because the data shows that girls and minorities lose interest at the third grade level, at the fifth grade level. There's a huge drop at the eighth grade level. And then after high school.
Forget
it. So we have to really encourage our middle schoolers and to let them know they're doing great work. It might not be the most complex project, but the fact that they tried is amazing. And so that's why we ask the judges to go over there and encourage them, no matter whether it's a high project or just basic science, because they're dipping their toe in the water and they're getting exposed. But we start at pre-K because another study shows that by the age of five, girls have already started forming their identities in STEM and have decided whether they're good at it or not.
Oh, at kindergarten?
Yes, and that shows how strong our stereotypes and in our culture are, and so we're trying to combat that.
And even they're making it on things like my favorite show in the world is CBS Sunday Morning, and I saw one recently where there are entire schools that are dedicated to doing this to get girls engaged. And minorities and these brilliant people that are paying a lot of money to put these schools in place, they said, we're not brilliant. It's selfish. We need their brains. We need them to be engaged for the world that is and the world that's coming. We need that science mind and the problem-solving mind. So there are other, you know, rays of hope around there. Is that one of the things that you think is unique to SARSEF? Because I know we were paired with eighth graders and other groups were paired with, you know, different grades. But like I said, it was a very well-oiled machine in terms of system. Is that one of the things that you think makes SARSEF unique?
I think so. Well, from the science fair perspective, we're one of the largest in the world. And that's because we start at the pre-K level. Most science fair structures don't do educational outreach. And if they do, it's certainly not free. And a lot of the fairs that do educational outreach is actually just explaining how to follow the rules, which is certainly not a great way to encourage students to enter.
Not and this so, student, not ever.
Exactly, right? And so, but very few of them, so there's basically none that do elementary. And then there's like a very select few that encourage middle school students and have them enter. But most of the science fairs in the country are just targeted at high school students. And by then, in Arizona, I know, we've lost them. You know, we're not going to get those students.
It's pretty much a forever thing. I mean, it's very hard. Once they're gone, it's really hard to find any type of ways to get them back. So you got to hook them. Get them when they're young, as they say.
Exactly.
And you have found ways to do that. And I love what you said about the girls love to solve problems. And that is one of the hooks, is it not?
Absolutely. It's tangible. You know, even if they're tackling a huge issue like climate change, they still feel like they've made a difference. And that's the most important thing. You know, I was looking and over half of the high school students that we're sending to the International Science and Engineering Fair are tackling a problem that's related to climate change in one way or another. And, you know, of course that was not planned, but it shows how pervasive this issue is and how the students are thinking big picture and long term. One of them was looking at the global food crisis that's impending. 2051, there's a horrifying statistic about having a major food shortage. So they're doing incredibly complex research, increasing crop yield because, you know, selfishly, I think he doesn't want himself or his children to suffer.
Right, right.
And, you know, another girl, our very top winner actually at the fair, did an amazing engineering experiment to measure how water vapor affects the troposphere. And
you gotta be kidding me.
It was amazing. And she found that it does affect it. And I think that this quote is incredible from her. She said, "This project is important because it shows everything can impact the environment, even something as seemingly harmless as water vapor."
You know, just keep me at judging the fifth grade level, okay? I mean, I spent a lot of time there. I was not eager to leave at all. And I was reading more projects and going around And it is because of the hope part, but it's pretty unbelievable when you see what comes out of that. And another thing I want to comment on, a lot of the kids that I talk to, the eighth grade kids, they mentioned their teachers. And I asked my teacher about this, and I asked my teacher about that, and my teacher said this in a very healthy way, not in a heavy, over, you know, heavy-handed way, but in an enthusiastic way, like really high praise for the teachers. And a lot of them are there as judges, not judging their own students, but teachers, retired teachers. I mean, it takes a village to man the booths at a thing that you put together that's big. I don't know what you're going to do next year because it just keeps getting bigger. I'm going to recruit people, and you can hold me to that. You can say, want to listen to that podcast you did, Gina? You got to get me five judges. I'm just, as soon as I know when it is, I'm going to block out the day and hopefully get more involved. And you mentioned briefly the international Science and Engineering Fair that's coming to Phoenix this May, which is in a couple of weeks from when this podcast will be aired. What's that all about? Is that the next level? You make it at regional and you go on?
Yeah, students have an opportunity or a choice to compete at our state science fair. But we're fortunate that we get to send eight projects directly to the international fair from our fair. And the students who come from the SARSA Fair win at four times the national average at the international fair. And I think that's because we're starting young.
Yes.
You know, we're catching them young enough. They have open minds and they're really dedicated to their research. One of the students that we're sending has been participating since kindergarten. So it shows how that long-term investment really pays off. But Intel ISEF as a whole is just the most phenomenal experience because it's the brightest minds from 75 countries around the world who are there to compete. It's high school only, and they're doing this incredibly high-level research. So many judges say this could be a doctoral thesis in itself. And it's because they're just so passionate and so engaged.
And smart. So darn smart. I mean, I got chills when you said that. And I meant it when you reached out to us, the judges, and see if we could go. And my daughter is having a baby in May, and I can't. But if I could, I would go to Phoenix for the weekend because, and I'm saying that very sincerely, I get invited to a lot of things, but something needs to feed my soul. And as you can tell from my newsletter, I go to a lot of things. I don't write newsletters about all of them, but this news had to be shared because people need hope. I am not the only one. You were a SARSTEF student as a kid, correct?
I
know.
Yes,
that research
was.
And, you know, let's face it. Let's be honest. You're smart. I know your mom. You had a really great opportunity to show up as success in the world. Didn't guarantee it. What did it do to form what you could have done? Because I think you probably could have done anything you wanted to, and this is what you're doing with your life's work. So what happened to you?
Well, actually, I didn't think I had a lot of opportunities when I started. I was a really shy 8-year-old. Again, I mentioned those soccer and swimming and baseball trophies. My friends all had them, and I didn't. And I was so jealous because, of course, that's what really matters when you're 8.
Yes, it does.
I didn't raise my hand in class because, you know, I was afraid of being wrong. And our teacher said, you know, you're doing the science fair this year. This was not a teacher who had had professional development on how to do a project, so she just sent home a packet, which was typical in schools those days. And fortunately enough, I had a parent who was really engaged and is an educator.
Right,
and so
right.
She said, what are you interested in? And at the time, I was really into digging around in the backyard and looking at bugs. So I did my project in third grade on bugs, and I won. I won at SARS at the school fair.
Yay.
And I was shocked. And then I won at the SARSF fair, and I got a trophy with my name on it. And that just was transformational for me.
It set the hook. Think about that. Jane Goodall started but digging around in her backyard and bugs and bringing worms into her bed.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are interviewing the next Jane Goodall. I'm barely kidding. It's like, it's so important that you shared that story. And I'm so glad I asked you because that will resonate with parents who are listening to this, hopefully to get their kids to listen to this.
Well, and the other thing that parents really like to hear is because I stuck with it and kept, you know, at first it was very tropey motivated. I'm not going to lie. I wish it was altruistic.
That's okay,
no,
too.
Exactly. It was all about, like, I want another trophy. And as an elementary student, it gave me the confidence to actually run for vice president and president of my school. So it totally transformed me as a person. And then by the time my science fair career was over, I'd gone to the international fair four times, all 4 years through high school. I got to go as an observer. I entered other national competitions and won. And I got $250,000 in prizes and scholarships by the time all of it was over.
Can everybody just take a deep breath and process that? Honestly. And it was because of a science fair.
Absolutely. And so if that's not an inspiration for parents to not have to pay for college, I don't know what is.
And there's so much wisdom in the whole way that story unraveled. That was it your mom that said, "What are you interested in?"
Absolutely,
that's parenting for anyone instead of her idea. So all along the way, and there are scholarships available for girls and minorities in these fields because universities are starving to get them. They're competing and vying for the same students, so. That's another incentive for people that want their kids to go to school and don't know what the financial way that's going to make that possible. I am so glad you told me that story, Liz. I am really, really glad you told me that story. Okay, so we are so over our 30 minutes, and who cares? It's our podcast, right? But I have two more questions before we close out. And a comment. If people want to help out in May, we'll put a link on our website so that people know how they can volunteer. I guarantee you probably up to and including the last minute they will need them. So the public can attend. Just get some information if this piques your interest and look at our website, our show notes. And then let's talk about TEP. They do great things to recognize great programs and energy savings all over our city. What were you recognized for last year?
We were recognized with the Bridie Award. And I think TEP selected us not only because our building is energy efficient and we're very conscious about how we use energy, but because we are creating their future employees and
yes.
students who are solving problems dealing with energy. Another ISEF student has done a chemical engineering project to make solar panels more efficient and cost-effective.
You gotta be kidding me.
TEP really values that.
Yes.
So many people think they're all about, using their own energy, but they're not. They focus on sustainability. They want their customers' energy bills and electricity bills to be low because that means that they're helping the planet.
Such a great answer, seriously. And the best way for people to get involved with SARSEF, I know donations are accepted. Monthly recurring donations are golden. So there's financial ways to support it if you believe in science and engineering and math and the whole SARSEF way of critical thinking and problem solving. And then we'll also, I like to tell everybody, because a lot of people listen to us when they're driving, the links will be on the show note page. So you can go to our MrsGreensWorld.com and find it. What are other ways? Volunteering at the fair? What other ways can people get involved?
We have other events throughout the year and other programs where we absolutely need volunteers, no matter what your level of comfort with science and engineering is. We really want to encourage adults to be engaged because it really is going to take an entire community to encourage these students. As I think a great example is some people who don't feel comfortable at all, even interacting with kids, let alone science and engineering, give awards at our fair. And you can give an award in somebody's honor, or you can just give an award in something that you're passionate about. For example, this year, there was an award for imagination and creativity. And there's been awards for music in the past. And those are kids who are getting an award who might not have won a first, second, or third place, but they are still getting rewarded for using their brain and having that commitment. And that means so much to them. An award, one student who got an award, a special award in fourth grade, went on and he found a potential cure for Parkinson's in high school. Oh. And it was that special award that that individual gave that gave him the encouragement to go on to just do the most phenomenal science we've ever seen.
You just can't say enough. And you've got me. And I don't want to know about these other events throughout the year. So don't even think about it. I am now hooked. So there's ways to get involved in many, many intentional and meaningful ways. So I kind of want to recap my feelings, the last word from Mrs. Green, and tell everyone on April 9th, Mike Biddle, from garbage man to carbon wrangler and investor, another great story of his journey as a chemical engineer and what he has ended up now, which is a carbon wrangler. And then on the 11th of April, Todd Hanley, who's the general manager of the Hotel Congress and Maynard's, he's going to be on our local show, All Things Agave. Our city turns into Agave City with the Agave Heritage Festival. And I guarantee you that will be a fun and informative show about community. So here are my thoughts, deep thoughts from Mrs. Green. Everybody who listens to this show knows that we're committed to raising awareness about every aspect of climate change imaginable because we know what's at stake. As I was preparing for the show, I was reflecting on one of the things I got to ask Jane Goodall, which I referenced when I was very blessed to spend some time with her several weeks ago. I asked her if she had hope, and her answer was very clear. What gives her hope is the children of the world that she gets to interact with all over the world with her Roots and Shoots program. She said that she sees hope in their faces and in their projects and in their proposed solutions. Quite frankly, those were the exact same feelings I experienced as a judge at the SARSA Fair. Upon leaving, I really did jokingly say to some of the organizers, can I just stay for a few days? I'll spend the night. Because I was filled with hope because of what I saw and because of the students I got to spend time with. SARSA is really and truly about every child thinking critically, solving problems. Our community and our planet are blessed to have such an important organization doing such important work, and we applaud them for that. We also applaud Tucson Electric Power Company for their major support for so many things that they help make happen, including this event. We're proud of their partnership with them, and we do our part to help build their brand awareness and their identity for the things they do in energy efficiency and renewable energy arena, and for their consistent report of local nonprofits like SARSEF. They help make good things happen. I thank you for being a part of our world, and I thank you, Liz Baker Bowman, for showing up in mine.
Thank you so much.
The end. The end. It was so great, and thank you, and I cannot wait to see you again and be a part of this and help promote all the great things you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much, Gina.
Take good care.
Really appreciate it. Thank you. You too.
Right back at you. Thanks, everybody.